Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Euro Snob Podcast. My name is Alex John, and today I'm joined by one of my good friends, actually one of my groomsmen, Jared Lay. Say hello to the folks, Jared.
How's everybody doing?
Good, buddy. And we're here to kind of preview the World Cup in case you've been living under a rock. The World Cup is starting in 2 days, although if you didn't know that, it's probably because the U.S. isn't in it. But we'll actually get into that a little bit later on. But I thought we might just run through these groups and kind of give our predictions and the feeling about what might happen, who to look out for, dark horses, potential disappointments. So just starting with Group A, we'll get right into it. We have Uruguay, Egypt, the host Russia, and Saudi Arabia. Now on paper, I gotta be honest, that is probably the worst group in the tournament. Am I wrong on that? When you see that, doesn't that just seem like not a World Cup group?
It looks extremely boring to me. But they do this every 4 years, right? The host always gets the, in my opinion, the most boring group, just to, you know, because they're a seeded team. So they get a more, I guess, easier route to make the knockout round.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be much random about these draws sometimes. And just on paper, when you see those four teams, I think what sticks out to me is this really should be Uruguay's group to lose. I don't see any reason. 100%. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't win it and win it fairly comfortably. I mean,
I agree. If you look at the teams, I mean, Uruguay has what? They have some legit European superstars. They got Suarez and Cavani. I mean, that's an extremely lethal strike group. They got Lodeiro from MLS.
You know, he didn't make the squad, I don't think.
He's a legit star in MLS. And I mean,
did Lodeiro make the team? I don't even know if he did, actually.
No?
I mean, I'm going to look that up because for some reason, I don't know if he did. But that whole team, I mean, like, starting from.
He's on the list I'm looking at.
He was left out. That's interesting. He was, but they have Suarez and Cavani, and on paper, that's got to be the best strike duo in the tournament, you know, in terms of playing just two straight out and out strikers. I would say that's got to be the best. But obviously with Uruguay, you kind of look at their midfield, and I think at least for me, like in previous tournaments, they've not had any sort of creativity. They've not really had any sort of dynamic midfield presence. That seems to be a little bit different this time around because they have Bentancur from Juventus, the young player who doesn't play that much for Juventus, but when he's gotten a chance,
he went over from Boca, right?
Yeah, yeah, he moved over.
Carlos Tevez?
That was part of the Carlos Tevez deal, I believe. And yeah, I mean, that was a good piece of business for Juventus, for starters. But so they've got Bentancur, and then they also have Lucas Torreira. From an Arsenal perspective, the rumor is today that that deal is done, hopefully going to be done before the World Cup, but at least everything from personal terms to a fee has been agreed. So we can certainly get into that later once it's confirmed. But, you know, with those two, they have a pretty dynamic midfield duo. I want to talk about their defense, though, because I look at the central defense pairing of Godin and Jimenez, and other than maybe Ramos, Pique, you know, Boateng, Hummels, and Varane and Umtiti, I'd got to say that's right up there as the best duo, wouldn't you say?
I would agree. I mean, the fact also, a big thing for me is that these national teams don't really play with each other a lot. I mean, they come in, they're basically mercenaries for their country. They come in from all over the globe. They don't get a lot of time together. The fact that they're both at the same club in Atletico Madrid, they're familiar with each other. I think that's huge.
Yeah, I think that lends itself to a familiarity. And if I'm not mistaken, the coach, Tabarez, hasn't he been there for several cycles now?
Since 2010?
I want to say at least 2010 he's been there.
That was the year that Suarez was, he knocked the ball out of on the goal line, right?
That's right, against Ghana, when it was pretty much a surefire goal. He used his hands to punch it out, took the red card, Ghana missed the penalty, and Uruguay went on to win. And then
for me, I was extremely apathetic to this World Cup. I had really no interest in it for the longest time after the United States got knocked out. And I sat on this exact couch and I called you and I was just shocked back in October that we weren't going to go to the World Cup. But now that it's here, it's finally happening, and this will be the first World Cup I'll get to enjoy in 8 years, obviously. I'm pumped. I'm all in. So, you know, give me Russia, give me Saudi Arabia, give me Uruguay, and give me whoever else is in this group straight
Egypt.
To the
bank. Egypt. I know. It's a thing. I'm right there with you because I didn't have that excitement. And I remember we had that conversation right after the US failed. But, you know, with guys like us that watch the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, there's so many great players that we've grown attached to that we want to see play for their country. And ultimately, when you're watching the U.S., you're not watching one of the better national teams anyways. And so, right. You know, I have no problem watching teams of a much higher quality do, you know, go to work. So, you know, Uruguay is definitely my favorite in the group. Egypt, and I feel like, at least for me, the second spot is going to come down to Egypt and Russia. I don't think Saudi Arabia has any chance, but Egypt, with the Salah situation, I mean, all indications are he's going to try and give it a go. But Egypt has a decent amount of Premier League players, players based in Europe. You know, they have Ramadan Sobi, who was at Stoke. He just signed for Huddersfield. El Mohammadi. They have Mohamed El Neni from Arsenal. So yeah. There's a decent amount of good players in that team. But if Salah can't play, I think they're kind of at a loss. So I couple that with looking at Russia. They don't have Kokorin, who's their best striker. He's out with an injury. Their main, you know, source of creativity is going to be Golovin, who's apparently headed to Juventus. I just read that today. Good move for him. So between those two, what's kind of your thought on how that's going to unfold? Do you think either of them can even challenge Uruguay for the top spot?
I mean, yes, just because Russia is hosting and who knows what's going on in those players' minds or what's going on behind the scenes, just because it's Russia. I don't want to, you know, talk ill of the hosts here, but not the most above the board country. But I mean, there's also talk that Russia could be the worst host countries, worse than South Africa in 2010. Worst host country in recent memory. And I mean, this team, like, what, they had a decent amount of injuries. They don't really have much defense. Their star striker is out. I mean, I just don't really see where the goals are going to come from and where, you know, I mean, they got a decent midfield. They got a lot of young guys in midfield, but you could pack midfielders in there all day. And I mean, how are you going to score and how are you going to still, keep people out of the net, especially against teams like Uruguay and Mohamed Salah? That 70% is still better than anybody that Russia or Saudi Arabia are fielding.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Russian squad right now, and you mentioned the midfield. I mean, they have Jagoyev, Golovin, Denny Sheryshev. So there's some decent quality, but I look at the rest of their squad. They have Akinfeev in goal. I think he's been awful for years, but he's always been there.
He's always been there. He's their legit, like, I guess, star. He's been, I think he won the UEFA, old UEFA Cup with CSKA or whatever.
Oh, that's right. That's how long it's been.
He's been on the same team since 2005. I used to always buy him in Football Manager because he was like the next, what's the great Russian goalie's name? Lev Yashin or whatever his.
Oh, back in the day, you mean?
Everybody compared him to. I don't think he's come close to that. I mean, I've never seen Lev Yashin play, but
Akinfeev just never played for like a big club. That's the thing. He stayed in Russia his whole career.
But that's kind of like, if you look at Russian hockey too, that's kind of typical with Russians. It seems like they tend to stay at home.
Yeah, it's very rare that they kind of make it outside of Russia, which is interesting. Right.
I wanted to ask you. I mean, you look at their midfield, and yeah, they have a decently, like, they have some players, I guess. But whose midfield would you take between them and Egypt? I take Egypt.
I would take Egypt, honestly, because I think Egypt has more balance to it.
Out of the team.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Yeah, they've got so Sobi at Huddersfield, sorry, El Neni. I would take them because also just in the few times I've seen them play, they seem to have a balance on how they want to play, you know? Right. They kind of sit a little bit deeper, knowing that they've got pace on the wings that can kind of exploit you on the counter. So I would agree with you. I would take Egypt. I think we're both kind of the consensus that it's going to be Uruguay 1 and Egypt 2, right?
Yes, I agree. But how do you see that game playing out, that Egypt-Russia game? I think it's going to be – I mean, I wouldn't say more than one goal gets scored in that game. But I think Russia's going to sit back. I don't think –
That might be one of the more boring games of the tournament.
And Egypt, I mean, that's Egypt's just going to – I mean, I'd imagine that they're going to sit back, be defensively organized, and try to spring Salah all tournament.
I would think so. I mean, I'm trying to see where – I want to see at what point that game happens. I don't know if it's the second game or the third game, because I guess if it is the third game and they both go into that game needing points, then –
It's June 19th.
June 19th. Okay, so it's the second game then, yep. Right? Okay. So they both kind of go into that game a little bit timid because, you know, presumably if Egypt loses their first game to Uruguay, they know that they need to get some points on the board.
Right.
Know? So they figure if we get one against Russia, we can beat up on Saudi Arabia, 4 points gets us through. Russia's probably thinking, well, we're not going to get anything when we play Uruguay. We probably beat Saudi Arabia, so they might play for a draw, honestly. And that, I don't know if that's going to set up for the most entertaining match. But I know you and I are both kind of keeping a bracket here to see who we've got going through. So I think we both pretty safe in saying Uruguay and Egypt.
Yeah, I have one or two. Egypt, Russia, and then obviously Saudi Arabia.
That's how I have it as well. So
fun factor on their second coach since they qualified.
And you mentioned a connection to the Australian coach as well.
Right. The coach that qualified them, Bert van Marwijk, excuse my pronunciation of the Dutch, is coaching for Australia now. So that'll be interesting to see how they do.
So Group B, this one is fairly clear cut in terms of who I think will go through. I just don't know in what order. So we've got Portugal, Spain, Iran, Morocco. I mean, obviously you start with Spain and kind of work our way from there. Compared to the Spanish squad of 2014 that completely capitulated, and then obviously the 2010 team that won the World Cup, when you're looking at this squad and the depth and the talent they have, are they as good as those teams? I mean, you look at their forward line, I look at they have Asensio, Lucas Vazquez, Iago Aspas, Diego Costa, players like that. I'm not sure where the goals are going to come from with this team, if I'm honest. I mean, obviously the midfield, it looks really good with Busquets and Saul and Koke, Thiago and Iniesta, Silva. I don't think anyone's doubting that they're not going to have tons of possession.
Defense looks great as well.
I mean, from left to right, you got Jordi Alba, PK, Ramos, Carvajal, and then a lot of quality proven players behind. And then you have arguably one of the top three goalkeepers in the world in De Gea. But I think with Spain, it's just about goals. I mean, they've gone through the qualification process pretty easily. Do you start with the Diego Costa? Do you play a false nine? I mean, how do you set that team up?
I mean, yeah, I you got to play Diego Costa, I think.
But it seems like every time he's played for Spain as the nine, he's not clicked. I mean, you know, because his style just doesn't seem to work with that possession-based attacking style.
I mean, yeah. I also think maybe that you switch. You have a little possession, but they're going to sit back, absorb in the midfield, keep it in the midfield, and then you spring him. You let him be the physical player that he is. I mean, goals are going to be hard to come by for them, but I think you got to play to the strength that they have and the fact that their best players are all going to be behind the ball. I mean, I don't know. And plus Costa, he can be a game changer.
Yeah. I mean, he has a physical ability that I don't think a lot of central defenders can match. I mean, the guy I'm looking forward to seeing is Marco Asensio, though. I think he's one of the most exciting young players in world football. And, you know, he's done well for Real Madrid. And I think this is the first time in a long time where there's more Real Madrid players on the team than there are Barcelona players. So that's kind of an interesting switch. But you know, looking at guys like Isco and Asensio, guys like that, I mean, who on the Spanish squad are you kind of excited to see?
De Gea. Just simple as that. I think he's their best player. And I know it's kind of weird because they have a bunch of amazing players on in the outfield, but I can't think of he's the best goalie in the tournament, in my opinion.
And it's kind of an interesting contrast because if you remember in 2014, Casillas had a nightmare World Cup. I mean, just awful. Like, I genuinely felt bad for how poorly that tournament went for him. And now you've kind of seen the reins be handed over to him and to De Gea. So I'm curious to see how that unfolds. And, you know, obviously, honestly, I think
this team goes as far as De Gea performs, you know? I mean, yeah, they could be lacking goal scoring power, but at the same time, if De Gea is on, he's hard to beat.
Like, and that keeps you in a lot of games too.
Right. You're getting out of this group if De Gea is on, just through his sheer will. I mean, Portugal, yeah, is a factor, but at the same time, your midfield can neutralize their midfield, and you just get one or two goals from Costa, which would be awesome, and you're out. You're on to the knockout rounds where you become a lot more pragmatic. And that's where De Gea really is going to, you know,
And that's a good point because, yeah, once you get to the knockout rounds, you really just need a midfield that can control a game and a good goalkeeper. And then, you know, you take chances when they come to you, but you're not necessarily going to create six or seven chances a game. You might get two or three. So you need a team that can kind of compensate for that. But you mentioned Portugal and they're kind of one of my dark horses in this entire tournament. Now, I know Cristiano Ronaldo is 32 or 33. I don't remember. And they do have an aging center back pair. You know, they got Pepe and Jose Font. But everywhere else I look on this team, I see quality. I see, you know, Rui Patricio in goal. I think you have two of the best fullbacks in the tournament with Rafael Guerrero on the left and Cedric Suarez on the right. And then in midfield, you don't necessarily have a ton of creativity, but I think you have a lot of functional players. You know, you have João Moutinho, William Carvalho, Bruno Fernandes, João Mario, Adrian Silva. And then in attack, you have Bernardo Silva, who's one of my favorite young players. You know, you have Andre Silva, who kind of struggled at AC Milan. And then Ronaldo, Gelson Martins, Quaresma, who has apparently been on this team for 20 years. And then another guy who I think is a big up-and-comer is Gonzalo Quérez at Valencia. Yeah. How good is this Portugal team?
PSG loaned him to Valencia?
PSG loaned him to Valencia, and I think he's on the market now. You know, I mean, I'd imagine he'd go for 50, 60 million.
They're trying to recoup their financial fair play deficit.
Yeah, because who knew spending like 400 million combined on Neymar and Mbappe would eventually come back to bite you, right?
Yeah. No, but this team, I agree with you. This team is probably probably my dark horse. I mean, they'll make it to the next round. And I don't know how much of a dark horse they really are considering they won Euros in 2016. But the young talent that is on this team and that is being nurtured at some of these clubs, it's great. And the fact that Ruben Neves,
yeah.
Did he make this squad and he's the championship's best player and he's coming up to the Premier League next year just shows you how much quality there is.
And he's fantastic. I mean, he is something special. If you have not watched Ruben Neves at Wolves, we'll see him in the Premier League next season, like you said. How much do you think winning the Euros helps them, though? Or does it help at all? I feel like it's a big kind of psychological burden to win a big tournament. So now you don't have this thing hanging over you like, oh, Portugal are good but never great. They didn't win the Euros in the most entertaining way, but, I mean, who cares in the end?
They won. They got the monkey off Ronaldo's back to win a major tournament. Like, Messi still hasn't got that knocked off. So I think Ronaldo will be playing with a lot more freedom, especially after winning the Champions League three times in a row.
Would you play him as a sole striker or would you play him up front with Andre Silva? Because I think that's kind of the debate that I've been reading different places.
I want to pack in as much talent as I possibly can. So I would play him up front with Andre Silva.
And then just take one off of the midfield.
Yeah.
And I mean, that midfield, I mean, it's very functional. I don't, that's the only issue with them. I don't see creativity.
Taking someone out of that midfield, right, and adding an attacking player into that mix, just because, I mean, you look at the names in the midfield, and I mean, these guys are great, and I love the fact that Silva, or you could put Bernardo Silva down there, and he's playing with João Moutinho, and they have some familiarity from their time in Monaco, and the fact that they're just two solid players that can push forward and also track back. You add André Silva and Ronaldo into that, that's pretty – I'd take that any day.
And then maybe you just put William in there as kind of your holding mid. And
which
then...
That's a good point. I had a question about him, because how much do you think the fact that what's going on at Sporting is affecting his mindset right now? Because I'm sure it's not much. I'm sure he's focused on the World Cup, but it is something that's a little bit different.
See, you said not much. I would kind of disagree. I feel like it's got to screw with your head a little bit, right? Because they just submitted their termination of contract papers literally a couple of days ago. So, and just for those who aren't familiar, I'll just give you a quick recap. Several of the Portuguese players, Rui Patricio, William Carvalho, Bruno Fernandes, Gelson Martins, they all play at Sporting Lisbon club in Portugal, one of the top clubs in Portugal. And their president, Bruno de Carvalho, had made some comments questioning the commitment of the team. I think he suspended some of the players for some reason. He basically made some comments that could pretty easily have been seen as inciting fans to violence. Then 50 ultras showed up at the Sporting training ground and beat up some of the players, including Bas Dost, who had like stitches on his head. And the players ultimately said, hey, we're going to terminate our contracts for cause, unsafe working conditions. So a lot of the Sporting players are looking to do that. And some of those guys are on this team. So I have to think that plays on your mind. I mean, I know Sporting is kind of trying to fight against what they're saying, but I think it's a pretty cut and dry case where the players are going to win. But when you have this impending situation hanging over your head, I would have to think it kind of messes with you, you know, even though fans have obviously taken their side and understand the situation. I don't know how you could really put that to the side. You know what I mean?
Right.
And especially,
I mean, it's an extremely intense and unique situation that I can't remember happening.
I've never seen this before.
Any sort of iteration. So it's especially on the eve of the World Cup. It's very interesting to me to see exactly how players who might be affected by this will respond.
Yeah, I mean,
the good thing is that this group is set up for Spain and Portugal. Whoever wins that game doesn't really matter. It's set up for both of them to walk through the group stage.
Yeah, I think the only thing with that group is you want to avoid finishing second so you don't have to play Uruguay in the next round. But
it'd be great to avoid Uruguay. And I don't want to get into the knockout rounds yet because we're still going through the groups. But I would take either of these teams over Uruguay.
Oh, yeah, easily. But I'd much rather play Egypt than Uruguay, I think.
Right.
With Morocco and Iran, I'm not even going to pretend I know much about the Iran team. Morocco at least has a few players people, you know, casual fans might be familiar with. You know, Mehdi Benatia from Juventus, Nabil Darar, Fenerbahce. The one that everyone says to keep an eye out for is Hakim Ziyech at Ajax. Attacking player, but
he might be he's Roma's looking at him.
Roma is?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a good piece of business for them.
Along with Kluivert.
Actually, the Kluivert deal's done, so
both those guys are going to be headed to Roma.
So, I mean, there is some quality in that Morocco team, but I don't see them getting anything against Portugal or Spain.
The one thing they have going for them is their manager, Herve Renard, who won the Africa Cup of Nations with two different countries. I think it's maybe Zambia? And let me look the other one up real quick. But that's how he's a great international manager. And I think he gets the best out of these off-the-trail countries.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in this kind of tournament, a manager really can compensate for a lot of the a lot of the shortcomings. You know what I mean? It's I think that's a good point. And so
Zambia and Ivory Coast, he won the Africa Cup of Nations with. So he's taken over his third African team, leading him to the World Cup. It'll be interesting to see how he does on the stage, because I think he's one of the better international managers in the game, at least under the radar. So it'd be interesting to see if he could put together a decent World Cup, and maybe I don't think there's any chance that they get to the knockout stages.
Yeah, I don't see it.
Spain. But if he could give them, you know, a run for their money, we could see maybe him getting a club job this fall or maybe next year, which would be interesting. He also is an immaculate dresser. I just wanted to put that out there. If you
see, look there's up, there's something to be said for style.
Bernard, he is like a Frenchman. He is a Frenchman, but he is what I picture people in France dressing like all the time.
That's high praise, actually. That's one of the nicer things someone could say about a
also
guy.
The manager of Iran is Carlos, excuse my Spanish, but Kieruaz.
Oh, Carlos Kieruaz, right? Yeah. I think he coached Portugal at one time, didn't he?
He did coach Portugal, and he was the assistant manager at Manchester United back in the day when Alex Ferguson was there.
Okay. So out of that group, though, I mean, you have Portugal, Spain coming out. In what order, though?
I'm going to say Spain beats Portugal in that game. Actually, ties. I'm going to say they tie, and Spain goes through on goal differential.
Okay. I have Portugal going through in first and Spain second, but I think it really might come down to goal differential, because they play the first game, and I think they both know that they're going to win their next two, so they can play that game more conservatively.
I think that's going to be a tie, because they know if they tie, they're both going
through. Yeah, they're set. Group C.
Before we go to Group C, Morocco or Iran? I have Morocco, Iran in that order.
Yeah, I have Morocco and Iran. I think Morocco's at least got a little bit more top level talent that, you know, can kind of do something, at least pose some threat. But
and they got Herb.
Yeah, exactly. So Group C, we've got France, Australia, Denmark, Peru. I got to be honest, this is one of those groups I'm not particularly enthused about. Am I too cynical here?
I'm enthused because I am a big fan of the French national team. I think they have some amazing young talent all over the pitch, and I love Kylian Mbappe, and I just want to see him run wild over all of these teams. But besides that, I don't really know who's going to finish second. So I come in kind of intrigued by the fact that it's up in the air, in my opinion.
Well, let me ask you about Mbappe, because we've seen when they played the U.S., France lined up with Giroud up top, and then Mbappe and Griezmann on the wings. And then, you know, they had Pogba, Matuidi, Kante in midfield. I feel like they might be better served playing Mbappe through the middle, and then Griezmann one side, Dembele or Lamar on the other side. I mean, how do you think they're best equipped in this tournament? Because I guess the counter argument to the Mbappe through the middle is that allows teams to play a deeper line against you, so his speed is kind of nullified.
Right.
Because France, you know, they do have some creative players in midfield, but not a true number 10, except for Nabil Fekir, really. But I don't think he's going to start a lot of these games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would probably keep him out wide, but that's my own personal bias.
Just but do you think it's because they play the deep line?
Yeah. It solely has nothing to do with the deep line. Solely because I love watching him streak on the outside, cut in, utilize his space, utilize his speed out in space. I just think he's such a dynamic player out there that from my own personal viewing pleasure, I want to see him in as much space as possible where he can run wild. Because I think France also plays a lot faster when the ball is flowing through him, then when, I guess, he's not on the pitch or when he's nullified. I think their team is just completely different. So whatever you could do to get him in space and get him with the ball at his feet, as opposed to, I mean, like you said, if you put him in the middle, there's a chance that, I mean, who knows where he's going.
Now, the thing that they the French press always talk about is Didier Deschamps, because people really don't seem to like him. And, you know, it could be a squad selection thing. I mean, they have insane depth for starters. You look at the players who didn't make it, and that team would probably make it out of a group in the World Cup. That's how good they are. You know, the likes of Lacazette and Martial and Rabiot, players like that who didn't make it. I mean, they're loaded. So why,
yeah, I mean, they are loaded. And going back to your forward question, I mean, you start with Griezmann. Who you put in the middle, though? I'm thinking about this again. You have Griezmann and Mbappe out wide.
They play, I mean, they've been playing Giroud in the middle, kind of as a target man. I feel like he doesn't fit that system, though.
No.
But I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure. Deschamps seems to really rate Giroud highly in that position, and I don't necessarily know.
I would have much rather, I don't know if this would have worked, but I would have much rather seen Lacazette come through the middle.
I thought Lacazette or Martial, either one, would have made a lot of sense. But they don't really have a backup.
Bring Dembele off the bench for another blazing wide forward. And Thomas Lamar, like, that would be a killer punch late in the game.
Yes. I mean, when you're playing on the counter and you put those four guys up front and just win the ball back.
No offense to Chelsea fans, but I don't want to see. I'm going to change my answer. I'd rather have Mbappe or Griezmann in the middle. Even though I'm not sure how Griezmann and Pogba can really play together if Griezmann's not out wide. But I'd rather. I don't want Giroud anywhere near this team. He's the one guy on this team that I do not enjoy whatsoever.
I just don't think he fits. I don't think he fits. You have all these dynamic players, and then you have a target, like a traditional target forward. And
I do want Mbappe out wide, though.
I have to think there's a way to get his speed and utilize it. But, I mean, fortunately, I don't think it's something they're going to have to worry about in the group stage. I mean, when you look at Denmark, Peru, and Australia, it's tough to pick one, you know, to go through. I mean, Denmark, you look at their squad, and I have it here. Christian Eriksen's kind of their primary creative threat. You do have players that we've heard of, like Thomas Delaney at Werder Bremen and Krondeli, and no Nicholas Bentner, so that's pretty upsetting. He's injured. And then they have Andreas Christensen in defense and Kasper Schmeichel in goal from Leicester. They're a decent team. They kind of remind me of Sweden, though, where they just have a lot of players who are decent, but maybe only one kind of special player. Right. Australia, I got to be honest, I don't know too much about that squad. I know their midfield, they have Jedinak and
Bert, manager.
They have Bert Van Marwijk.
Saudi Arabia.
They have that young kid everyone's talking about, Daniel Arzani, the 19-year-old. And then Peru, I mean, the big story is that, you know, having Paolo Guerrero ruled eligible to play. So when you're looking at those three teams, who realistically do you see getting out of there?
Well, Peru, I don't. But Peru could be the most creative, fun team that's not France in the group. I mean, I think what their average height is like 5'8". So I think they're going to be playing some pretty fun on the ground football. But Denmark. My answer is Denmark.
I would go Denmark. And then Peru and Australia, how do you have those two?
Peru and Australia. I just like Australia is a fine team, and I think they're going to be set up well. I think they're going to have good organization, but I just don't. Maybe it's just because I don't know that much about them, but I just don't think they're that dynamic. I don't think.
I agree. I don't think they've got the top level talent. You know, right. I mean, Tim Cahill's 38. God bless him. I mean,
he's not going to start. Hopefully,
because apparently he is.
Sell jerseys, right?
I'm told that he's. I'm told. Sorry, I read that he might start, but I would bring him off the bench, although this predicted lineup I'm looking at doesn't have him starting, so I'm hoping probably not for his sake. That's just a lot to put on a 38-year-old player. But I wanted to actually move to Group D, because in my opinion, this might be the most interesting group in the entire tournament. You have Argentina, Croatia, Nigeria, Iceland. For me, that's the group of death. If there is one, I think that's it. What are your kind of initial thoughts about that group? I mean, obviously you have a loaded Argentina attack.
Right.
I'm not sure about the rest of it, though.
I think Argentina gets out of there. I mean, maybe not relatively easy. I think maybe two wins and a draw, but and they're two close wins, but I don't think they're going to – there's much threat of them, you know, not finishing first. I look at the teams. I mean, they're good teams, but Iceland's always a threat. I mean, we saw that in Euro 2016. They got the thunderclap or whatever, the Viking clap. And that's always exciting. But at the same time, I mean – They're not going to surprise anybody this time around. Like, we saw them in Euro 2016. We know that they're to be taken seriously. They're going to come with great structure. They're going to be pragmatic. They're going to try to just absorb, because they don't really have much. They can't go pound for pound with these other teams in this group.
Right.
And I could see them, you know, maybe the one draw Argentina gets is to Iceland, just because Iceland just packs the box and Messi can't find any space. But I mean, Croatia, I think, is, like you said earlier when we were talking, Croatia is your ultimate sleeper, but it's always your sleeper every year. Is that not what you said?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, because I told you, yeah, I think Croatia might be my dark horse. But then I thought back to Euro 2016, and they were my dark horse then. And then in 2014, they're my dark horse then, because I just, if you read the names from their squad, you would think, wow, this team's got to be pretty good. I mean, defensively, not a ton of names stick out. You know, they do have Dejan Lovren, Chorluka, Vrsaljko from Atletico Madrid. So there are some familiar names there. But, I mean, I'm going to read the midfield names. You got Luka Modric, Real Madrid, Ivan Rakitic, Barcelona, Mateo Kovacic, Real Madrid, Milan Badej, Fiorentina, Brozovic, Inter. And then in attack, you have Mandzukic, Perisic, Kalinic, Piazza, Kramaric. I mean, that's a lot of genuinely top-end talent. And so they should be a lot better than they are, but they didn't really look great in qualifying. Is it one of these cases where the pieces just don't fit? I mean, you had mentioned something off air, which I thought was a great point. They don't really have the pieces in place to let Luka Modric do what he does best.
No, I agree. I think that's exactly what I just don't think the pieces necessarily fit together. And I think that was a little bit like what we were talking about with France. I mean, France has a bunch of amazing, exciting young talent, but how do you fit the pieces together? I think the same issue with Croatia. Like, where's the defensive midfielder that kind of holds everything together for the amazingly gifted attacking midfielders to do their thing? You know, where's the glue to this team?
Yeah.
And I don't have an answer to that. And I mean, it seems like Croatia hasn't been able to find an answer to bring everything together and kind of make it more of a formidable team.
Cause you can't stick Kovacic, Rakitic, Modric in midfield and expect that to stop anyone from scoring goals. I mean, that midfield lacks any mobility, athleticism, and defensive stability. Now, they should be able to score goals, no doubt about it. But, you know, if that's the one thing kind of holding me back with them, and you contrast it with Nigeria, and, you know, from what people say, this is one of the best Nigerian teams in a long time. And you look at the names and you can see why. You got Kelechi Iheanacho at Leicester, Alex Iwobi from Arsenal, Victor Moses from Chelsea, Ahmed Musa, Odion Ighalo, Wilfred Ndidi, John Obi Mikel, who's apparently is, I mean, I don't know how, but he's only 31, even though I think
that's
he's been around
for amazing to me. There's
right?
No way
he's been around for at least 20 years.
I feel like Manchester United Chelsea transfer saga over him was when I was 5 years old. Like, there's no way he's
There's no way he's 31. I don't believe it. But so you look at those, you look at that Nigeria team. How do you kind of see them shaking out as opposed to Croatia, for example?
I see them, honestly, I see them having the skill and the defensive fortitude to kind of absorb Croatia's amazingly gifted midfield. And I feel like I've said this a couple times now, but it seems to be true in these World Cups where teams, I mean, in any knockout or any short national team competition, it just seems like teams are more willing to sit back and then spring. And I like this Nigerian team just seems like they have the athletes that are going to be able to break through Croatia. And that's their biggest challenge. I mean, Argentina, yes, but you throw that game out because you're amazingly gifted. I mean, you don't throw it out, but I mean, if you win it, that's fantastic. If you don't, there's still, you beat Croatia, you beat Iceland, you're in. So I think they could easily, they have the talent to easily do just that.
And, you know, I'm initially I was going to go with Croatia as the second team, but you've kind of convinced me that Nigeria might be the bet there, honestly. But one thing before we make our predictions that we kind of talked off air is Argentina might have some issues in terms of creativity because they lost two key players, Lucas Biglia. He's not a creative player, but, you know, one of their better midfielders. And then Manuel Lanzini. You know, they're both out for the tournament is my understanding. But looking at this Argentina team, you look at their forward line, it's Messi, Dybala, Higuain, Aguero, Christian Pavone, who I think is going to have a breakout tournament, Angel Di Maria, players like that. I mean, how do you line up this team? And secondly, defensively, do you think they're good enough? Because, you have Otamendi, Fazio, Marcos Rojo, who you're familiar with as a Manchester United fan. I mean, do you think that, Sergio Romero, you've seen enough of him.
I'll answer your defensive question, and then you can follow it up with how you would set up the team, because I'm more interested in your opinion, because I think you're a little bit more familiar with some of these players than myself. But defensively, having watched a decent amount of these guys, no, I don't. To win the tournament, no. To get out of this group and maybe progress to the quarterfinals or semifinals, I think they could hold it together and they could get by on their attacking talent alone. But that's a huge weakness. And there's, in my opinion, I see that being their Achilles heel. I see that being the exact cause as to why they will not win this World Cup. And I think I just gave away my prediction here of who's going to win, but it will not be Argentina because of their poor defense.
And I agree. And actually, I misspoke because Sergio Romero is injured, so he's not even eligible. So it'll be Caballero or Franco Armani. I have no idea who that is.
You tell me how you would set up the team. Like, interesting tidbit about Nigeria is that they too have goalie issues, and that their starting goalie has only ever played in the Nigerian Premier League. So that'll be an interesting. See how he does on this gigantic stage.
That's a big adjustment. Actually, I didn't even know that. With Argentina, they always seem to start with Higuain. I don't get it. I would start with Aguero. I mean, I've seen predicted lineups where Higuain starts and then Messi, Di Maria, and Lo Celso start behind. I just, that doesn't make sense to me. I
love starting Lo Celso in a attacking role after he played all season in Paris as a more defensive midfielder.
Exactly. I'm not sure that you can play him higher up. I mean, if it were me, I would start with Aguero rather than Higuain. I think he gives you better movement. I think he opens up more space for Messi.
Would you play both?
I don't know if the midfield is good enough to play both. I think you need that extra body in midfield. I would try to play more of a 4-4-3-3, really. You know, Messi on the right, maybe Pavone on the left.
And then could they take out one of their crappy defensemen and just put on another attacking player and just press?
They have the personnel to press. That is actually the interesting thing. I don't know how they're going to line up in midfield, though, because they have Benega, Mascherano is apparently still there. Do you play Banega and Lo Celso, Banega and Mascherano? If that's your starting midfield, that's a really slow, unathletic midfield. And once you come up against the France team that, you know, you've mentioned all their youth and athleticism, or you come up against Germany or any team like that, I feel like you're just going to get swamped in midfield. So Messi's going to have to just keep dropping deep. And I just, you know, I don't know how that sets up for him. I mean, I think they'll get out of this group in first place, and then we'll get into what I think happens afterwards. But I would say, I think you talked me into Nigeria, actually. I'm going to say Argentina and Nigeria get out of this group. After all my talk about Croatia being a sleeper, I think you've talked me into Nigeria.
I like that. I like the fact that we got at least one upset going on here, because we've been pretty chalk so far.
I think this is the one where they've got the personnel. I mean, how do you have it unfolding?
I have the same. I think Nigeria is going to be an amazingly exciting team to watch, and they're going to look fantastic doing it.
I think that's the most important part. They will look great. If you haven't seen their jerseys, please go find them. And also, what have you been doing with your life, honestly? So moving on to Group E, you have Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, Costa Rica. Top to bottom, this Brazil squad might be the best overall squad in the tournament. They're at the very least in contention. Your thoughts on Brazil trying to atone for what happened 4 years ago? I mean, there's no shortage of motivation. Is this going to be Neymar's World Cup?
Have you seen the new Nike commercial? You got to watch the Nike commercial featuring the Brazilian national team. They bring back Ronaldo and they recreate, I believe it was 1998 World Cup commercial where they're dribbling through the airport. The parts of it. It is one of the most. I watched that. I'm not Brazilian. I have no Brazilian blood in me, but I had goosebumps after watching that. I was so on board with this Brazilian team. They still have issues, obviously, across the board, but Neymar's back. I think he took a little bit longer than necessary to recover from his injury. I think he's going to be ready for this. This is their redemption. I think this is the team to beat, in my opinion.
Now, looking at their squad, how do you line them up? Because presumably, first of all, you have two of the best goalkeepers in the world to choose from, either Alisson or Ederson. You presumably go with the PSG center back duo, Marquinhos and Thiago Silva, although you also have João Miranda. You have the best left back in the tournament in Marcelo. You have Danilo on the right. I presume you play with Casemiro and Fernandinho kind of as your holding mids, and then maybe play Willian or Coutinho as a 10. You have Neymar, you have Gabriel Jesus, Douglas Costa. How do you line up this team to get the best out of them?
I mean, what you just said there, that lineup pretty much tracks my thinking. But instead of, I mean, you got so much attacking talent. You can't play, I don't think you play Fernandinho and Casemiro both. I think you play one or the other. Coutinho, Willian making up the midfield, and then Neymar, maybe Douglas Costa. Gabriel Jesus in that position, and then I don't know. Do you go Firmino, or do you play? How would you do it?
See, it comes down to
attacking talent's pretty interchangeable up top.
I do think they'll go with Casemiro, Fernandinho, because I think that's what they did in qualifying. But the big question for me, and I think you can answer this as someone who's watched the Premier League as much as I can: do you play Firmino or do you play Gabriel Jesus?
Right.
As your number nine, I think Firmino's a more creative player in terms of linking up, but Jesus is just a lethal finisher. And I feel like that's what they need.
I would go Firmino, and then, I mean, I don't see any harm in bringing Gabriel Jesus off the bench. I mean, you play Firmino, who I think will play a little bit, I don't want to say within the free-flowing ness of the Brazilian team, but I think he offers a little bit more dynamism throughout the game. And then if, you know, you want to go for some sort of, you know, hammer home, you want to make a point to some one of these teams, you know, you always got Gabriel Jesus to come off the bench. And I mean, at that point, you see Gabriel Jesus coming in off the bench. What are you going to do? I would give up. I'd go home.
I mean, it's
deal with Firmino all game. And now you Gabriel Jesus is replacing him. The guy's going to come in and score 4 goals.
I mean, with the creative talent they have, I could see it, honestly.
That's another thing, though. Like, I'm mentioning playing Firmino and the fact that maybe he's a little bit more creative, but they have so much creative. See, this is the issue that I'm having here. Like, this is why I'm not a soccer coach or never will be, is that they're like, it's an abundance of riches. Like, you can't really go wrong, in my opinion. But maybe you do play the better, pure, out-and-out goal scorer.
I would my own opinion, I'd play Casemiro, Fernandinho in midfield, and then I'd play Coutinho as a number 10, Neymar left, Willian right, and then Gabriel Jesus. Because I think with Coutinho, Willian, and Neymar, you're going to create so many chances, you just need a pure finisher. Right. But I think we're kind of both of the opinion that Brazil are going to walk this group pretty easily, I think. Now, looking at these other teams, Switzerland, Costa Rica, Serbia, I mean, my inclination is to go with Serbia because I think there's a little bit more upside to their team in terms of some of these players. Mitrovic had a really good season at Fulham on loan from Newcastle. You have Zivkovic at Benfica, the winger who had a really good season. And then one of my favorite players, having got to see him live, albeit in a substitute appearance, is Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, who I think is just due for a breakout tournament. Because I don't think a lot of people know about him. The Lazio midfielder, rumored to cost upwards of 100 million euros. I think that Serbia has enough experience in that team with guys like Kolarov and Ivanovic and Matic. I think I would lean towards them. You know, Costa Rica, you know, coming from the U.S.'s region, you know, we're pretty familiar with a lot of those guys, Brian Ruiz and Joel Campbell and all those guys. And then Switzerland, I don't know. For me, Switzerland just seemed like one of those teams kind of in the mold of Denmark and Sweden, you know, where they have players at good clubs, but they're not necessarily any superstars. I mean, how do you see those other three teams kind of unfolding?
I mean, Costa Rica was the darling of the last World Cup, right?
I think they got to the quarterfinals, right?
Yeah. I don't see them getting out of this group. I think they're going to finish dead last.
I would agree with that, yeah. So I guess it comes down to Serbia, Switzerland then.
Costa Rica does have Keylor Navas, though. And like my David De Gea comment earlier, these games, to me, I mean, every game that these teams play, the other two games that these teams play that aren't against Brazil, I think are going to be low scoring. So who knows? Maybe Keylor Navas can pull some saves out of his hat like Tim Howard did against Belgium, and maybe they pull off an upset or two. But I think they're finishing dead last. Switzerland, and I agree with you. I think Serbia's got more. Just looking at the rosters, I would take Serbia just comparing them straight up. I mean, I don't really tactically, I don't know how they typically line up, but just looking at the names on these rosters, the talents with Serbia, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think Milinkovic-Savic, I think, just kind of puts them over the edge in terms of having that elite player. So I think we're both going Brazil 1, Serbia 2 in that group, Switzerland and Costa Rica to follow, right?
I agree.
Yeah. Group F, we have Germany, South Korea, Mexico, Sweden. My first question to you, because I was looking at their roster, you leave a guy like Leroy Sané at home.
Very surprised.
Which shocked me, right? What was your reaction when you saw that? Especially because he was left at home, presumably for Julian Brandt at Leverkusen. I mean, the argument, I guess, was that Sané wasn't necessarily good for the country, but was good for clubs. So, first of all, what does it say about Germany that they can leave a guy like that at home?
I mean, they're favorites for a reason, right? This is why the United States will never win a World Cup, because Leroy Sané would be the greatest player we've ever had, and they're leaving him at home. Like,
that's scary, right?
Yeah. But I saw an internet picture that said Brazil have Neymar, Argentina have Messi, Portugal have Ronaldo, and then Germany has a team, right? That's basically, I mean, that's why they're good, yeah. Is that they play, they have a style. They've had the same head coach for, what, 2010? When Jurgen Klopp take over 2000, for years?
2010, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah. Before, he was from that cycle on.
Yeah.
I mean, they know how they want to play. They have players that play well together. I mean, it seems like most of these guys are, I mean, of Bayern Munich or familiar with Bayern Munich's style, have come from similar styles. Bundesliga knows how to produce good young talent. They're going to be a well-oiled machine. They're going to be looking to follow up their victory in Brazil. And I think that they're, I mean, this group, good teams, but clear-cut favorite, in my opinion.
What do you think about Neuer being given the starting shirt despite having missed most of the season?
I don't see any issue with it. I mean, he's still
like, if you were Ter Stegen, though, wouldn't you think, man, I had such a good season for Barcelona. That's kind of messed up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, I feel like Germany's not a typical national team. Germany's an actual team. And they have their players. They have their starters. Whereas some of these national teams, especially some of the lower ranked teams, you have a hot season, you're the starter. But here, I think they've played within such a good system that, I mean, you ride with the player that's most familiar. You ride with the player that you've been riding with. It's almost it reminds me of like a club setup almost.
So. And you mentioned that familiarity, and here's kind of where the interesting divergence comes, is that there's no longer Miroslav Klose as your striker. Right. You're now playing Timo Werner, and for as good as I think Werner is and the upside he has, there is still going to be an adjustment there, you know, by not having that proven World Cup goal scorer. Now, you look at the lineup that's predicted. You have
Thomas Muller.
Yeah, you still have Thomas Muller. You have... I mean, you have so Neuer, Kimmich, Boateng, Hummels. Left back will probably be Jonas Hector or Marvin Plattenhardt. I don't know who that is. Then you have Khedira, Kroos, Ozil in midfield. Then Muller and Royce on the wings and Werner. I mean, that's a strong team. Do you think Werner's good enough to lead the line, though?
Behind that team, yes.
I would think so, right?
Yeah, I think he's a solid player. I mean, I can't. Amit, I haven't, you know, watched him play that often, but I mean, Miroslav Klose wasn't like this amazingly gifted soccer player, but when put in this team, he performed. I mean, he's a fantastic player, but at the same time, he was never, in my opinion, a world-class striker.
He was just the one who could capitalize on all the chances that this team created.
Right, and that's all they don't need someone who's going to be this dynamic game-breaking talent. They have talent all over the pitch. They're typically going to outclass players. The fact that they're cohesive and that they're just every position, you match them up, and they're going to have as talented, if not a more talented player. So the fact that they don't have maybe this guy who has – such a pedigree, I don't think that doesn't concern me, because you also look at Kimmich. They put Kimmich in and he's become one of the best players. I mean, they lose Lahm. The team hasn't missed a beat.
They lose Schweinsteiger. They just plug in Khedira. I mean, that's crazy.
Plug and play, and the machine keeps rolling.
I mean, the one thing I'll say is they don't have, I mean, Royce with his tendency to get injured, and Royce is one of my favorite players for starting, but, you know, that not having a pure winger like Sané, I wonder if that comes back to bite them. I don't think it will in this group, though.
I love, even if he doesn't start, I just love having the option to bring in a player like that to kind of break open a game.
I agree.
Not even that option. Like, I get it. Like, maybe he's not a starter. Maybe you don't want him in your first 11. But at the same time, he's such a good option to have. Like, it's a luxury. Why would you not?
And he started for the team that won 100 points and was the champions in England. And he was a regular starter.
That coached all of the players
In this German team, it's, I mean, that one, if Germany goes out, you know, even if it has nothing to do with wingers, that's going to be a bad look for Yogi Löw. But I guess, you know, winning a World Cup last time, maybe he buys himself a little bit of leeway. Now, here's a team that has been the subject of a lot of discussion, and that is Mexico. And Fox, in all of its fucking incompetence, will push you as much as they want to root for Mexico. I'm never going to root for Mexico.
You gotta add the explicit tag to this podcast.
Oh, I know. That was it there. I was actually doing really good till then. But I swear, like, seeing Alexi Lawless post his stupid tweets about rooting for Mexico, no, they're our rivals. They would never root for us to go far. Why would we do the same for them? But you look
at I will say one good thing about Mexico is Chicharito. I will always love that guy, even though he's Mexican.
You can never dislike Chicharito. I will agree with that. I think he's
such passion. He's just
got that big smile.
Great player in any sense of the term, but he's a goal. He scores goals. He knows how to find space. He knows where to put his body to make goals happen. But I mean, I remember when Manchester United started him in what, the 2011 Champions League final
against Barcelona,
and he just, oh my god, he was a disaster in that. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't create anything. He was the only striker out there. It was just,
he was outclassed in that one. Yeah,
and I think, like, he's great in the Bundesliga. He's not a top level striker by any means, but he comes down a level, goes to Bayer Leverkusen. He could be a very, very good player.
Yeah. Yeah, and now at West Ham, I mean, I know he kind of struggled this season, but, you know, I think he's got something to offer, but I don't know how...
West Ham? I don't want to get off the World Cup, but I'm kind of interested in that question.
I don't know if that was a loan or a sale. I thought it was a permanent sale to West Ham. So he was at West Ham last season, but I don't think he put up crazy amount of goals. But looking at
starting at the end of the year, either,
not to my knowledge. I thought he might have been coming off the bench, and because I know they had Andy Carroll and all that. Right. But I'm looking at the rest of the Mexico squad. They do have players at a lot of good clubs. You know, they've got a bunch. They've got Hector Herrera at Porto, and I think he's fantastic. The big prospect on their team is Irving Lozano at PSV Eindhoven. I know that he's attracting interest from a lot of big clubs around Europe. Jesus Corona at Porto, Raul Jimenez, who just signed on loan at Wolves. And then they do have the MLS guys, DeSantos, Giovanni and Jonathan DeSantos, and Carlos Vela. To me, it feels like Mexico's window was 4 years ago. I mean, do you think I'm off on that? I feel like now some of these players who were exciting players are no longer that.
I agree. I think, I mean, kind of, it kind of tracks the what we just talked about, Chicharito, like someone who had burst on the scene. I mean, he was more 8 years ago. He really burst on the scene, but it's almost kind of gotten a little, I don't want to say stale, but I could tell you what my prediction for this Mexican team is. I think that without a doubt, they will go out in the last 16, considering they have gone out in the last 16. Every World Cup since 1994.
Is that right? Is that actually? Oh my god! That's 100%. I would have thought for one of those times they would have gotten through to the quarters, but I guess not.
94, last 16. 98, last 16. 02, last 16. 06, last 16. 10, last 16. And 14, last 16.
And
so given, I'm not going to, you know what? When I see a trend, I'm going to go with it.
I was going to say, at some point, at,
well enough to get out of this group, especially against Sweden and South Korea, but I, that's it.
And speaking of Sweden and South Korea, I mean, I got to be honest. I don't know much about either team. I know South Korea has Hong Min-son from Spurs. He's a pretty good player, but looks like they have another player from Red Bull Salzburg, Hwang Hee-chan. I'm not too familiar with that team, so I really can't say much about it. Sweden, they do have Emmy Forsberg from Red Bull Leipzig. No Zlatan Ibrahimovic, interestingly enough. I mean, I would have
loved to see Zlatan come back for the World Cup.
I thought it would have been cool, just because of the presence he has. I don't see either of these teams posing a threat to Germany or Mexico, though. Do you?
No, I don't. I'm looking at the Swedish team, and I mean, to be honest with you, I know Lindelof, and I'm excited to watch him play and see how he does at the World Cup. Hopefully he can, you know, have a nice little tournament and maybe propel next season at United. But Mexico, here's another Mexican stat. They've lost 5 competitive matches in the last 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
That tells me that they're pretty good against teams like Sweden and South Korea. What they aren't good at is when they play teams like Germany and Brazil and Chile. They lost 7-0 to Chile in the Copa America, I think, 2016. They lost to Germany 4-1 in the Confederations Cup. So I don't think Mexico is going to have much trouble with the likes of Sweden and South Korea, specifically because I think we're two of the more knowledgeable soccer fans, and I can't really tell you much about the South Korean team.
I've got nothing on them, honestly. I think
Sweden is, comparing the teams, Mexico, I would take the Mexican players over the Swedish players on purely talent standpoint. So that's where I'm at with looking at this. I think they're set up better than Sweden. And I like the talent that Mexico brings to the table. So I'm going Germany, Mexico, then Sweden, South Korea.
Yeah, that's how I have it as well. And Mexico got through CONCACAF qualifying pretty easily. And as you and I can attest to, apparently that's...
CONCACAF qualifying's hard, man.
Apparently it's hard. So, yeah.
Hey, Costa Rica went to the semifinals.
Quarterfinals.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think those are the two. Yeah, South Korea, again, all I really know is Sung Min-hon and Key from Swansea, but I just don't see enough talent there. But so I think we're on the same page with that. Group G, moving on to Group G, we've got Belgium, Panama, Tunisia, England. Let's start with Belgium because
this is everybody's favorite team.
This is the team everyone's thinking is going to break through. On paper, there's certainly the talent. You know, you have the likes of an Eden Hazard, Dries Mertens, who had an unbelievable season in Napoli, Kevin De Bruyne, one of the best players in the world, Tielemans from Monaco, Axel Witsel, Lukaku, you know, players like that, you know, Alderweireld and Vertonghen.
How do you set them up? Do you play a 4-3-3? Do you try to pack in Lukaku, Mertens, and Hazard?
That's a really good question. I don't know how you get the best out of that.
I love those three as a front three, though. I mean, Mertens out wide with Hazard out wide, and then big, powerful Lukaku, who is like a modern-day Ronaldo in the middle. Like, That's fantastic.
I mean, you're going to score goals. And then, you know, I guess in midfield, you'd play De Bruyne with Witsel and, you know, maybe Witsel and Tielemans.
Is Witsel good? Like, I'm being serious here. He's highly rated, I feel like. But I honestly, because he went to Russia, I haven't seen him play. Everybody talks about how good he is.
You know, it's funny. people have talked about him for like 6 years as like this really good center midfielder. I rarely saw him play.
He's like $50 million.
And now he plays in China in at one of the Chinese clubs that paid him big money.
He went the Hulk route.
Yeah, he went the Hulk route, and he's kind of been anonymous since then. And so I don't know how good he actually is. And it actually brings me to a question I had for you, because this involves one of my favorite midfielders, Raja Nainggolan. I don't understand.
He got left out because he smokes too much or something like that, right?
I don't get it. I mean, help me out here.
Roberto Martinez.
He's a fucking idiot, right? Because, yes. Like,
hasn't Roberto Martinez gotten fired from every job he's had?
Yes, is my he left Wigan for Everton. No, where did he go? Yeah, Wigan. He left to go to Everton.
He got relegated.
He got Wigan relegated. He won an FA Cup, and then went to Everton. If I remember.
And then he had like a really good season at Everton,
followed by a really bad season at Everton.
But he knows how to coach Lukaku.
He does, but I mean, it just seems like there's been so many problems already just with that, right? I mean,
this is a team like France, I feel like. Like, on paper, I'm looking at these guys, and I think they should fit together really well, but in practice, it doesn't seem to really ever come, that magic moment doesn't seem to ever really click and come together. And I don't know
what's
going to happen this year either. And I think this is the last year that they're really, this is their World Cup. If they don't do it this is the end of their golden age.
I was going to agree. I think this is, they've got their best players at their peak right now. De Bruyne and Hazard, Lukaku. Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Dries Mertens. All these guys are in their prime. Again, I just don't get leaving Nainggolan at home. You have a powerful central midfielder with who can shoot from distance, who can tackle, who can cover ground.
It goes back to my Sané point. Like, if you have this player, you have this option. Why not bring him? We've seen, like, England, I remember in 2006, brought a, like, 15-year-old Theo Walcott for no reason other than to get him experience at the World Cup. Like, why would you leave one of your best players at home? Like, I just don't.
It doesn't make sense because it's not like you have tons of players like him either.
Right.
And especially if you're going to be trotting out Fellaini at any point, if you're in a tight game, do you want to bring on Fellaini or do you want to bring on Nainggolan?
I don't want to bring on Fellaini ever.
Yeah, just at any point. No, there's no Fellaini. I mean,
Fellaini excites me just about as much as Giroud excites me.
So not at all then.
Yep. That's, I mean, Drew's a gorgeous man rocket, but I do not want to watch him play soccer.
Yeah, and see, Fellaini doesn't even have the gorgeous part going for him.
No, he's got a pretty cool afro, though.
He has a good afro, but no beard, and he just looks like a doofus, you know? Yes. Now let's talk about the England team. I think this is one of the first times since I can remember that no one is expecting England to do anything. And I almost wonder if that works to their benefit this time, because the generation of Lampard, Gerrard, Rooney, John Terry, that era is finished. And now you have this young team, you know, the likes of Raheem Sterling, Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Jesse Lingard, even the likes of like Trent Alexander-Arnold, who else is here? Yeah, Trippier, like all these kinds of players. Do they have what it takes to do anything in this tournament, you think?
Well, I was going to say that I think the fact that they're kind of, I mean, for me, like England every year has been one of the favorites. You mentioned the names, Lampard, Gerrard, like they were always this superpower with these huge megastar names that just always fell completely flat on their face. Like even Rooney. Like he was one of those as well. Now you got this team full of young, actually really, in my opinion, exciting talent that here in the States are flying completely under the radar. I'm sure in England it's absolutely bananas for them. So I don't know how much the fact that they're kind of that one of those under the radar teams really helps them. But I'm excited for this team, to be honest with you. I think they play good football. I think that Gareth Southgate has them Probably playing better football than who was the guy right before him that got booted?
Oh, Roy Hodgson.
No, not Roy Hodgson. Sam.
Oh, Big Sam, who was there for like three games.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited to see how they do. They beat Nigeria, which is one of our favorite teams, in a friendly a couple days ago. They beat them 2-1 in Wembley. And Harry Kane, they're going to go as far as Harry Kane, who I think, honestly, I'm going on a limb here. I know we might do this later, but I think he's going to be top scorer.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that. Actually, that's I suppose I could see that because they do have some pieces here that are interesting. I guess the one thing, and I read this today, I'd be curious to get your take on it, is that. They mentioned that there's so many Spurs players on this team, and putting aside my Arsenal bias, the idea that so much of your core of your squad comes from a team that's never won anything, like no meaningful trophy ever. Does that matter, do you think?
I think it helps because you know how much I like familiarity in a game where the players have to get up to speed with each other really quickly. That's why I think Spain was so good for so long, is that they had so many players from Barcelona and Real Madrid that were familiar with each other, and they were just able to dominate because they knew how to play with each other. So I think it helps in that sense. I also think it helps in the fact that they're really good at finishing just below the players that are in the teams for Spain and Portugal and Germany. So they'll probably finish like fourth. But yeah, I don't think it helps when you have a bunch of Tottenham players, going up against players who are, you know, actual superstars, no offense to Tottenham fans.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I think they get out of this group. I mean, I think we're both of the opinion that Panama and Tunisia don't pose any threat here, right?
No.
But nope. Do you see England winning this group, or do you see Belgium winning this group?
I see Belgium winning. I think England finished second.
Yeah, I think that's what I have as well. So the last group here, before we get into our knockout predictions, is probably the most unpredictable group, honestly, is Poland, Japan, Senegal, Colombia.
I think this might be my favorite group.
I think it might be, honestly, because I don't think I realized how many players I liked are from Senegal. You know what I mean? I looked and I didn't know that Keita Balde is right. From Senegal. The player at Monaco who was originally at Lazio. Mbaye Niang at Torino. Obviously Sadio Mane. Idrissa Gueye from Everton. Cech Coyote, West Ham. And my favorite center back in the world, Kalidou Koulibaly at Napoli.
Amazing pronunciation.
That was really good, right? I actually that didn't practice fantastic. That. So that's a really, really good team. And, you know, but before we kind of get into that, I'll just go through the other teams. You know, Colombia, you're looking at Falcao, who's had a resurgence. You know, obviously, James Rodriguez, Cuadrado, Davinson Sanchez and as a center back, Yerry Mina, the other center back from Barcelona. It's not as good a Colombia team as previous years. I would say the same about Japan, honestly. You know, I think they do have the likes of Keisuke Honda and Shinji Kagawa, but, you know, they don't really have the upside that they've had in previous tournaments where I've actually predicted them to do anything. And then
the interesting about Japan is that they changed their coach recently, and they kind of went to a more possession-based game where previously they were trying to do counterattack. And the results have gotten slightly better. They're looking better. So I think they're going to be an interesting team to watch. I don't think they're going to win the group, obviously. I don't think they're going to finish second. I think they're going to finish dead last in this group. But I think they're going to be a very tough, composed team.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's no easy game in this group. I mean, you look at Poland. You have two really good center forwards in Lewandowski and Arkadiusz Milik. Good midfield with, you know, Zielinski and Błaszczykowski and, you know, players of that nature. Krakowiak.
Who would you say is the best player in this group?
The best overall player in the group?
Yeah.
You know, it'd be really easy to say Lewandowski, but I actually would probably go with Mane.
I think it's between Mane, Lewandowski, and James. Because James has had an amazing year at Bayern.
Yeah, James really turned it around.
A James jersey, but I look at this group as almost like the NFL. Like any of these teams, with the exception of Japan, has a legit chance to come out of this group. Like this is going to be fantastic television.
Which, I mean, looking at the matchups, which one do you think would be the best matchup to watch? I think Senegal-Colombia could be like the game of the tournament.
You stole the words right out of my mouth.
Right?
That's because exactly the one I'm looking forward to.
They and both play at great tempo.
Third game for both of them. So there probably is going to be a berth to the knockout round on the line.
And you're probably going into that even needing to win it either to go through or to win the group.
Yeah.
Which means, you know, you avoid Belgium in the next round. So this one's kind of tough. I got to be honest. I had written down what I thought initially, and I think I've changed my mind because initially I had written down Poland, Colombia, Senegal, Japan. I don't know how good Poland is, though. You know what I mean? I feel like they've got a lot of name players, but I'm not sure how that's going to translate. I don't know.
Name players, and besides Lewandowski, I'm not that high on a lot of them.
I mean, you look at Krakowiak, who didn't hack it at PSG, and now he's at West Brom,
right?
Or he was on loan there. I don't know if he's still there anymore. My guess right now is maybe Colombia 1, Senegal 2, Poland 3, Japan 4.
I'm actually with you on that. Yeah.
But I feel like I'm going to change my mind 6 or 7 times in that group. But I think that's going to be the most unpredictable group.
One of my all-time favorite World Cup upsets, by the way, Senegal over France.
2002, right?
Yeah.
I remember that game. And they say that this might be the best Senegal team since that one.
I hope so.
So that'll be interesting to see. So we got through all the groups. Well, do you have your bracket there?
I do. Let me put in what we just. All right. So I have in the bracket for me, Uruguay, Portugal, France, Nigeria, Brazil, Mexico, Belgium, Senegal, Spain, Egypt, Argentina, Denmark, Germany, Serbia, and then Colombia versus England. So you want to start with Uruguay and Portugal?
Yeah, and that one I have Uruguay and Spain, but I think either way, we both have Uruguay losing, right? In my next one, who did you have? You have France versus...
I have France, Nigeria.
I have France, Nigeria there. I
love Nigeria. But I think France is going to be too much for them, especially since I think they have similar, I wouldn't say styles, but, I think they're both very, athletic teams. And I think France is going to be able to counter Nigeria's athleticism with their own, creative attacking.
I agree with that. I would go France over Nigeria. Then we both have Brazil, Mexico, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think Mexico can give Brazil a game, but I think Brazil is too good top to bottom.
Listen, like I said, last of 16, Mexico out, Brazil.
Yeah. Oh, God. That'd be a tough one for them to run into. I mean, that Brazil team. So then we have Belgium versus, I guess it'd be Senegal, right?
I have Senegal, yeah.
Yeah. So Belgium versus Senegal, I think Belgium go through. Although I think Senegal give them a game.
I think this will be similar to the U.S.-Belgium round of 16 in 2014.
So you think Senegal will have a chance to win?
I think Senegal will have a chance, but Belgium overall just has too much talent and will prevail.
So next one we have, you would have Spain, sorry, Port. You have, I have, you'd Spain, have Spain versus Egypt.
You have Portugal, Egypt, yeah.
Yeah, so either way, we'd have Egypt out there.
Egypt out. I mean, Salah can only take you so far, and I think this is as far as he's taking Egypt.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially
I have Portugal going through there. So that means They would play the winner of Argentina and
Denmark.
Denmark, and I think that's Argentina there. Then we have Germany versus Serbia. I think Germany there, right?
I'm with you. Germany, and then Colombia, England, and that's a great game in my opinion.
That one, I just thought about it, and that's the most interesting contrast in styles, because Colombia is just this free-flowing, balls-to-the-wall attack, and England is more of this, not discipline, but it's a very structured system. I might lean towards Colombia just slightly. Who would you have there?
I'm going England. I think Colombia had their moment 4 years ago, and as much as I love Colombia and I love watching them play, and I love James Rodriguez and the fact that Falcao is back, I think England will surprise in this tournament, and I think they're going to surprise all the way to the round of eight, where if you're going with Colombia, then I'll kickstart it with Germany, England, and say that Germany is going to beat England.
Yeah, I would take Germany over Colombia. So I think we each have Germany going through to the semifinals.
Right.
So I would have right above that, you would have it Spain versus Argentina. I'd have it Portugal versus Argentina, which would be a really cool matchup because it'd be Messi versus Ronaldo.
Right.
And it'd be happening a little earlier than I anticipated, but just how the bracket worked out. I'd read a tweet somewhere online, and tell me what you think about this. Like, they said, this is probably the best supporting cast Ronaldo's ever had, and it's just a shame it happened towards the end of his career. Like, he did have Figo in 2006, but, like, that was really kind of only when Ronaldo was hitting his stride. He was not the player he was now.
Right.
On paper, I think Portugal have the better surrounding cast.
I agree. And this is where it gets fun, right? I would take Portugal. I would take, if I'm looking at your bracket, I'm taking Portugal over Argentina. I think we talked about it earlier. Defense is an issue for Argentina. I don't really like their midfield too much. I mean, Messi is the most amazing player I've ever seen with my own two eyes. But Ronaldo, in his own right, is pretty damn good. And Portugal's got a real good team around them. I'm taking Portugal over Argentina.
I would take Portugal over Argentina as well. Yeah, I think just the overall balance of the team, it seems to be working after they won the Euros. You have the attacking talents like Guedes and Bernardo Silva. You have a strong midfield presence in William Carvalho, experience with Moutinho, you know, and obviously the finishing ability of Ronaldo. So in that matchup, you have Spain versus Argentina, but you're going Spain there, right?
Same reason, yeah.
Okay. So above that, it would be Belgium versus Brazil.
Yeah.
I have Brazil there. I
have Brazil as well. I think Belgium, I love their players. I think they're great, but this is Brazil's tournament.
So then above that, you would have France versus, in my bracket, it's France versus Spain, and yours would be France versus Portugal. So we might actually go different directions with it from there. How do you have that unfolding, France versus Portugal?
I have Portugal getting through. I have them beating France. I think they're, at this point in the tournament, I think France or Portugal will be better organized, and they have a more dynamic superstar that can break the game open.
And I would have Spain beating France. I think France is going to show a little bit of that inexperience with some of their younger players.
Right.
So I'd have Spain beating France. So you would have a semifinal of Portugal, Brazil.
Right. Spain, Germany.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Spain, Germany. Okay. And then I would have Spain and Portugal flipped, basically.
Right.
So I would have Spain versus Brazil, Portugal versus Germany. Take it away. Who do you got going in the final, and who do you got winning it?
I have Brazil, Brazil, Germany, and then I have not quite a repeat of the 7-1, but Brazil beating Germany in the final.
Getting a little bit of revenge there.
I don't know if I hinted at it enough, but like I said, I think this Brazilian team is, this is their year.
I would have Brazil beating Spain. I'd have Portugal beating Germany. I'd have Brazil versus Portugal. You know, I'd written this down earlier and I wrote Portugal as the winner, but I mean, when I'm looking at the Brazilian squad, man, that's a good squad.
Right?
That's a really good squad. Everything
is unmatched.
There's not a weakness in that squad. They have terrific fullbacks, experienced center backs, toughness in midfield, and creativity in finishing up front. I'll go Brazil to beat Portugal in the final. So we both have Brazil winning it, and it's interesting because, you know, there's only so many teams you really project to go far. So even if you have like a sleeper team, you never really think they're going to go much further than the quarterfinals. You know, it's not really like the last World Cup where, who was it? Germany beat Argentina in the final.
Yeah.
And so Germany beat Brazil in the semifinal, and Argentina beat the Netherlands, I want to say. Now, who did Argentina beat to get to the final?
The Netherlands.
It was the Netherlands, right? Yeah. So that's interesting that we, you know, neither of us have, well, obviously the Netherlands aren't even in it, but we don't have Argentina getting that far, presumably because this version of Argentina is just not as good as previous versions. And, you know, something we didn't really get into, and I just want to kind of briefly say it, is I don't know how you fit Dybala and Messi into a team. And so I think Dybala ends up probably sitting on the bench. And I just think Argentina has a lot of weapons, but it can only fit so many into the attack, but not enough to cover their weaknesses, you know?
I agree.
So you mentioned Harry Kane, top scorer. Are you sticking with that?
Yeah, I'm trying to go off the wall with this one. I'm thinking Harry Kane.
You realize he would have to score most of those goals.
I think he's going to go off in one of these early games.
He'll score like three against Tunisia, probably.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. I think like he's going to pad his stats on June 18th against Tunisia. He's going to score like three or four goals. They're going to win 3-4. And then maybe he tacks on another two against Panama. Maybe gets one against Belgium. And then, you know, he's right there in it.
My golden ball would go to, it sounds really easy to say, but I would probably say Gabriel Jesus, with the amount of chances that Brazil creates. So just kind of quickly going through some other categories, who's your biggest breakout star? Like a guy that kind of similar to James Rodriguez at the previous World Cup, where I think people like us knew who he was, but like to the casual soccer fan, he's just going to break out and become like a household name.
I don't think he's going to, I think he's already a household name, but I think this is Mbappe's tournament to really, you know, shine. I think he's going to be the dynamic player that we all know, and now he's coming to the masses.
I think that's a really good shot. I think, well, I didn't have Serbia going very far, so it's tough to say Milinkovic-Savic.
I was going to say, you love your Milinkovic-Savic.
It's funny because I saw one Lazio game in person and when we were in Italy, and I saw him for 20 minutes. He came on as a sub, but just his touch on the ball, his physical presence, I mean, it's really genuinely impressive.
You know, your breakout star, I mean, you already named him, Gabriel Jesus.
That is true, actually. A lot of people who aren't huge fans of the sport don't really know him.
I mean, James Rodriguez was a huge name in the soccer world before the last World Cup, at least in my soccer world.
Yeah. That's a good shout, actually. Yeah, I think Gabriel Jesus could be seen as a breakout star. The other one I would look at is probably Marco Asensio. Mm-hmm. I think he's one to keep an eye on. Biggest disappointment. Who do you think the team is that's just really going to underperform expectations? Their own expectations.
The way we've gone through it, we have Argentina. I mean, what other teams really do we have that aren't really living up to their expectations?
France, maybe. But we have France losing to, like, Portugal and Spain. I don't know if you can consider that a...
maybe Mexico, but I mean, how could you not live up to expectations if you're going out in the last 16? That is your expectation.
That is literally the baseline expectation.
And I don't think they have much. I mean, the other answer is Belgium, right? Because everybody expect, if they don't win the World Cup, then I feel like that's not living up to expectations for this golden generation.
But yeah, I'd agree with that. I would.
Argentina is my. I think that they're just due for a down cycle.
I would say Belgium, Argentina.
I think Messi is going to retire again after the World Cup.
Messi will retire from the national team.
Yeah.
I could see that actually because
America a couple years ago.
Yeah, that would make sense because I think at some point you can only do so much, right? You know, you can only carry these guys so much. So I think we've kind of gone through the preview. Just before we wrap up, I kind of want to get your take because we haven't had a chance to talk about this. Fox's coverage of the World Cup, is it going to be the worst ever, terrible, average, or slightly above average? There's no good option.
I'm gonna say terrible.
I would say
I'm not gonna go with the worst ever just because I want to give myself something to look forward to. And what I look forward to is maybe Alexi Lawless not being as big of a dickhead.
That is asking a lot, man.
I know he's going to be like even more grandiose dickhead than normal, but I'm just hoping it's like, I just wish he would get like, honestly, I don't no ill will against the man. Just maybe miss his flight.
He's already there. That's the sad part.
He's already there. Yeah. You know that they're going to do most of the games from the studio.
Oh yeah.
They're only sending a handful of people to Russia.
They have like, seven broadcast teams are sending only two to Russia.
I hate Fox solely because they've taken the ESPN model of getting these personalities that apparently people are drawn to and just like blowing it out for literally every single thing they do. All they want is just these over the top personalities that have insane opinions about things like Alexi Lawless. And I mean, I'm obviously trying to get a job with Fox, considering I'm picking Harry Kane as top scorer of the tournament. I'm looking forward to seeing games on my television. I'll leave it at that.
I don't know. My Spanish is really not good, but I will consider watching Telemundo if Lawless is on TV.
Yeah, it might be a good opportunity to pick up some Spanish.
Honestly, it's not going to be the worst thing. I'd love to watch like especially a Mexico game on Telemundo. And here's my thing with Fox, and I've said this on Twitter, so if you follow me, you've already heard this. But here's how I pictured their marketing meetings going before the U.S. didn't make it. All right, we got the World Cup. What are we going to do? Well, let's use all American voices because, you know, now we don't need British accents to talk about the games. So let's use American voices. And let's just talk about MLS and American players. Okay, then what happens? US doesn't qualify. All right, what's plan B? Plan B, well, let's run some stupid commercial with 23andMe, that DNA testing thing. Discover your roots. Okay, well, a lot of people's roots have nothing to do with the countries that are in this tournament. Like for me, for example, India's not in it either, so I really have no options. Plan C. Let's tell people to root for Mexico. Well, they're our biggest rivals, so no one's going to do that. Nope. Plan D. All right, well, we spent all this money on the World Cup, so now we're just going to conduct everything from a studio in LA, and we're going to pretend that people won't notice the difference. You know, that there was an article in The Guardian today. If you haven't seen it, you should read it. Like basically just bashing Fox. I think they called Lawless like a slack-jawed doofus that American soccer just can't do without for some reason.
That seems extremely accurate.
Yeah, they just made fun of the whole Fox crew.
Remember Gus Johnson calling soccer?
I mean, they put Gus Johnson on a Champions League final once.
Right.
That should probably tell you something.
Like that's
fucking insanity. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they're going with this lead pair of John Strong and Stu Holden. And Stu Holden is just the most irritating person to hear. And then they had a Fernando Fiore character who's literally just a cartoon character. I mean, there's nothing about that guy is real to me. I mean, he just plays a character. But it's like what you said.
They're all playing a character, I feel like.
Yeah, no, there's no genuine analysis. And that's what irritates me, because people are like, oh, well, you know, controversy sells. I'm like, does it, though? Like, have you ever seen Fox's soccer ratings? Have they ever been good despite the strategy they use? And so you contrast it with ESPN's World Cup coverage last time around, which admittedly had Lawless, but they put him to the side for games that he knew nothing about, which was most of them, you know. But they had the likes of Michael Ballack and Gilberto Silva, Santi Solari, who I thought was fantastic.
Right.
They had Roberto Martinez doing those tactical breakdowns, but like they actually didn't gave him something he knew something about.
Respectable people with rational opinions.
Exactly. That's
some depth to what they were talking about, instead of just shouting out, like playing, like you said, cartoon characters.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and, you know, you hear Lawless and he just yells out these stupid phrases like, oh, man overboard. I mean, it's soccer. There's no man overboard. It's not a ship, you know, like, or, oh, man, things are getting loaded in midfield. Like, who talks like that? And it's funny because I saw BBC had an advertisement for their coverage and they have like Lampard, Gerrard, Rio Ferdinand, Cesc Fabregas, Pablo Zabaleta, Gary Lineker. What's that?
Where can I watch them?
Oh, we got to stream it somehow. Yeah, that's a thing.
Exactly.
Somebody
hit a link in Alex's Twitter feed.
I know. Please shoot us any streaming links. But anyways, I just wanted to get that off my chest. I know we've gone for a little while, so if you're still listening, kudos to you.
I do kind of have one more topic that I'm interested
in. Oh, yes.
I want to see what you are interested in, or see if you have any thoughts on this. But like the host country, Russia, we haven't even mentioned this. And I mean, last time I checked, they have a pretty bad hooliganism problem. I mean, Euro 2016, their fans attacked the English fans in Marseille. Like, that's interesting to me to see what measures they put in place to prevent this kind of thing.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because part of me feels like, wow, that it really could be even uglier, because now everyone's coming to Russian turf.
On their home turf.
The only thing that makes me think maybe they clean it up is they know that the world is watching, right? And Putin wants to show on put on a display display of strength. But I think you're right. I think that could be like a massive issue. I don't know what measures they've taken, but I remember the game when Russia played England, you had Russian fans climbing over the security area to get to the English fans, and the English fans are running away. And they had all those stories that Russian fans have been like training in the woods, like to be professional hooligans.
I've been watching Russian hooligan videos of these guys beating the crap out of each other in the woods. Fanstyle.ru. You can watch videos of the Russian hooligans facing off against other hooligans and just beating the crap out of each other out in the woods.
See, I just would not want to be anywhere near that. That sounds horrifying, actually. But that's
Green Street Hooligans or Red Among the Thugs. It's like they just like they're living that culture that England had back in the 80s and early 90s. And it's just for the World Cup, it's like kind of terrifying because everybody's going to be there. And how do you stop like you could put all these precautions in place, but how do you really stop these massive radical groups from attacking opposing fans? It's a gigantic city.
Yeah. And you don't have enough law enforcement to do that. There's always going to be some issue that comes up. So I really hope we don't hear about any sort of like serious injuries or anything like that from fans. But, you know, overall still excited for the World Cup. You know, I think, ultimately, even though the U.S. didn't make it, the soccer fan in you kind of takes over.
It'll be nice to not be stressed out watching soccer.
Yes, not having to worry
about the American team and how we're going to advance out of our group, which includes Algeria and whatever crap countries are in it that we shouldn't even be competing with.
Yes.
No offense to Algerians.
No, God, no, I don't want any angry message from Algeria. But no, I'm excited to see what unfolds over the next couple of weeks. And You know, I'm sure we'll be in talks, but definitely want to appreciate you coming on and you know, taking some time to go through this, and
a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll certainly catch up later on as the tournament unfolds and see how accurate our predictions actually were. So if Brazil gets eliminated early on, then we're both kind of screwed, I guess. But for Jared, my name's Alex, and we will talk to you guys next time.